come and see you. Maybe once or twice a year. I think nothing that should be better right now than some downtown atmosphere. In the dance halls and the galleries, picking in the OTB.
Song to be a song that I figure I could sing for a long time. Certain words that you write on a Monday, you sing them on a Tuesday, and they don't feel right, you know, and you say, well, you know, I'll be out somewhere on the road, I'll come to this line, I won't want to sing it. So there's constant revisal. For instance, in Good Friends, You and Me, there was a verse that goes, sometimes change comes at you like a broadside accident. That was the original line, but the lines that followed it were as different as one draft was, sometimes change comes at you like a broadside accident. You get minor cuts and bruises, that's all. You could hammer out the dents. Starting with that first line, there were a lot of second and third lines, and the way it finally ended up being was, sometimes change comes at you like a broadside accident. There is chaos to the order, random things you can't prevent. And the irony of the whole thing was that about a month ago, Larry and I got hit by a drunk. Our car was totaled, and we walked away from a devastating accident with very minor injuries. And I kept thinking, you know, I gotta be careful what I write. Sometimes change
comes at you. How did Mike McDonald get involved with that track?
We had the point where the vocal went on, which wasn't necessarily like when the track was finished. Often the vocal was one of the early components. I don't know, there's something about the way my voice sounded on that particular track. That's the voice that I kept hearing to play part of the other character. I just thought it would be a good blend on that particular song. It turns out it worked out nice.
No hearts of gold, no nerves of steel. No blame for what we can and cannot be.
Fiction, what inspired that song?
That's Larry's music. That's my husband's music. The two songs that he wrote the music on the album are very short lines. Like, I'm used to coming out of folk music to, you know, almost like iambic pentameter or a variation of it. So this is all like ba-dum, ba-dum, real short phrases. Even at the demo stage was like highly mecho, you know, like high-tech kind of architecture, minimalism, Philip Glass, short phrases, repetition. And Truth Fiction was one of the first gems of direction on what the lyrics would contain. And after that, it was just a matter of editing, because you could sing that song for days and find counterpoint. I mean, I had pages and pages of ideas, and that was just a general sampling. You know, I had to edit it way down, because it could have just gone on forever, because there's so much conflict. This is a time of terrific conflict.
How did innocence become one of the three great stimulants?
Well, artifice is everything which is natural. Brutality is an obvious adrenaline getter. But innocence, when a country enters into its decadence, there's a youth culting, envious of youth, you know, want them for your own, or you can want to twist them. Or there's a lot of that now. Everybody is fascinated by innocence. Husbands divorce and marry younger women. They find a refreshingness in that lack of experience.
Brutality and innocence, artifice and tables, cry to the bathrooms, joke around, cheap talk, deep talk, 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 around the block.
I look at Jimmy Swaggart, you know, to me he's just this god-awful evil-looking, you know, as any guy's prancing around in spider web and studs. You know, I mean, he's supposed to be playing out, you know, Mr. Theater of Good, right? You get Mr. Theater of Evil, and I don't see them looking that much different except for costume. You take any kind of primitive culture, and they always had their demons, like, dressed up and bouncing around, and, you know, like, as a part of their culture. I think that these demons are a part of our culture, and that they are important, that they represent all things murky and dark. And, you know, and if an evangelist can get up there and go, and then the devil, and he does it, you know, with words. He's telling stories about evil and the devil and these terrible things, you know, with words. And what's the difference, you know, whether these guys get up and they personify evil? You know, it's just all theater. It's all showbiz.
How'd you get Rod Steiger to deliver his sermon? Tax free.
We had just seen The Pawnbroker, and we knew that we had to get somebody to play this preacher. Up until then, we had the actual transcription, and we couldn't put it out that way. And so we thought, Rod Steiger is a great actor. He's a neighbor of ours. He only lives about four or five doors up. So we met at the Colony Drugstore. It's in our neighborhood. So we met him over there, played him the tape, and he said he would do it, you know. So it's feeling fairly easy. You get with chance and wars when church and state hold hands. But tonight I'm going dancing with the drag queens and the punks. Make me deliver me from the sanctimonious skunk. We're no flaming angels. He's not.
Talks, hell, hate, and call it love. Dog,
takes me now about 3 years to do an album, because if I tour, it takes me two if I don't. It takes a year of living and wandering. I do some things that I didn't do when I was a kid, but pretty much I live the same life. Like, I go anywhere I want to, I go by myself. It's not cool for a star to be seen by, especially in this era of bodyguards. But I like to just kind of free agent it. You know, I always was a loner. I like walking around in cities by myself. I can see things better. I mean, I've had some companions that I'm comfortable enough or compatible enough that I enjoy that, but often I just see better, I observe better when I'm on my own. If I spend more time in New York, there'll be more New York songs.
And where it's made, the slaves will be taken. Some are treated well in these games of buy and sell, and some, like poor beasts, are burdened down to breaking. Doggy dog, it's doggy dog, ain't it, flim flam man? Doggy dog, you can lie, cheat, skin, skin, beat him any way you can.
Especially in Shiny Toys and stuff, there is an idea of money really being the root of all evil. Now, I think over your albums, there's been kind of an ambiguous relationship to money and glamour and stuff. It's like you can see nice things and you can see bad. This is the first time that I've really gotten a sense of you saying, you know, no, it just brings out the worst in people.
It does, yeah. I can't say that I don't like money, but I don't like what it does to people. Now, I know that I could live with so much less, but once you've had something, and you're going to come down to less, you're really in danger of embitterment. You know, sometimes I think it's better off, you know, to have nothing. Maybe you should keep artists starving, keep some honest.
Flashy boys and girls that really play. Good, 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 shiny toys. When it's over, don't you hate to have to put your toys on?
After I did the Canadian Band-Aid thing, and I just felt in singing the words that the general overtone of these anthems was self-congratulatory, and that the cause, you know, there's another way to look at the We Are the World, which is a good idea. It can narrow down to simply we, you know, all of this heroism in view of all of these big charity events of the past, the Bangladesh, the no nukes. You know, there was a lot of self-congratulation went on, and everybody that appeared in these things, you know, was the new consciousness, and inevitably it did their careers some good and everything, and the money never got to the people. Never. It got stripped off by the government, you know, it got stripped off by the inevitable expenses of presenting such a thing. It never got there.
Garden planet, oasis in space. Some hearts hurt, they can hardly stand it. Famine phantoms at the garden gates. Ethiopia.
General song than, you know, it's not specifically him, it's a Martin Luther King, it's, you know, all the voices of idealism. It's addressed to them singularly, but when I was writing it, all of the public voices and some private voices, I mean, everything that I ever heard along that line, death of that whole idea, you know. I guess it came about because of its rebirth now.
Sometimes I'm because I think I see.
there is one love song, Lucky Girl, and that is a different attitude from other love songs that I've written, that's for sure.
I'm a lucky girl. I'm a lucky girl. Chasing the rainbows. Wise guys, shy guys, and sly lover boys with big bad bitten eyes. And I love them more. I trusted as far as I could pitch my shoe.
Out here in no man's land, you know, what jazz is like a dirty word, you know, to the record company. The thing that killed me when we played this record was at the playback, one of the executives, like, heard Lucky Girl, and he said, oh, I really like this one. I really like this one. It's good. It's jazzy. I thought I'd die. Suddenly jazz was hip. They were thinking about putting this thing out as a single because Sting, with all his personal power, you know, from being a huge pop star and craving virtuosity, has now made the possibility of playing with virtuosos and being still being popular kind of hip. So go figure.
end of the day, between the sand and the seagulls, watching the glorious sun setting on the bay. Here comes a